Hey guys, grab yourself a coffee or a tea and get comfortable. We are kicking off episode 2 of the At Home Show. I'm Norm, and this is the Tokyo Lens Podcast. Welcome to the At Home Show. And as always, if you are a regular listener, welcome back. In our last episode, we kicked off on the island of Kyushu over in the area of Beppu with Dogen talking about kind of learning Japanese and some funny backstories and everything. That episode, as well as the promo episode, if you haven't listened to the very first episode of all of this, I'm going to link it at the top of this description. I highly recommend that you go and check that out. But today, we are still on the island of Kyushu. And we're going up to a slightly more major city, a city that draws people in from all around. And it's very, very understandable why. And you'll hear all about it in today's episode as we sit down with our next guest, a good friend named Michaela. So, Michaela, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
A little sleepy. I'm okay.
Yeah. We decided to record this episode at something like 8:30 in the morning. I don't know why we chose this, but it just felt like the right thing to do. So. Are you an early riser by nature?
No, not at all. I love staying up late. I feel like that's the easiest time for me to like get my own work done. It's like when the pets are asleep, everyone's fed, everyone's like fine and taken care of. There's no shops to go to. I mean, now we can't go out anyway, but, you know, there's no cafes to go to. That's like when I can finally sit down and do things for a long period of time. So usually I stay up till like 4 a.m. But recently I've been getting up earlier. So I think like today was kind of ambitious. I was like, let's do it at 8:30.
Yeah. It was entirely your idea. So I typically edit the best at night, which is one of the reasons I've set up my studio to look like perpetual night. Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I edit at night, but I always edit out here in the living room. So like by the window. So usually at night it's like pitch black, you know, or like there's like the sounds of the city, there's cars going by. But like now it's like beautiful day, sunlight, birds chirping, kids laughing. And I'm like, the outside world.
You know, honestly, I would have pegged you for an early riser. If anything, the last time that we actually had the opportunity to spend any time together was when we did that like West Tokyo trip.
Yeah.
And we went to all those places. And each spot, you were like the first person awake every morning.
Well, yeah, but that's work. I think like when you're in work mode, you're like, oh, I got to get up and like shoot stuff before we meet at the place because, it's different when it's work. Usually like during work shoots when it's like a 3 or 4 day trip. You're like sleeping when you sleep, but then you get up, you know, maybe there's like some morning light you want to shoot for like a B-roll. You know what that's like though. I remember you flying your drone around. I remember like getting up one morning and you're already outside flying your drone to get like the morning fog. Like, so
Like 4:30 in the morning or something.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it happens. Awesome. I'm not a morning person by nature though, no.
Yeah. It's a bit of a stretch. So, But the thing that kind of adds to it for you as well is that it's not just your schedule. You've got the pets, right?
Oh, yes.
So for those who are unfamiliar with Michaela as a guest, I should probably have you introduce yourself. Where are you from? What do you do? Tell us a little bit about Michaela.
So my name is Michaela. I'm from Canada. I'm from a small town called Kamloops in British Columbia. And I moved to Japan 15 years ago. When I was 17 years old, I was an exchange student at first, and I did a homestay, and I really liked it. And then I just kept renewing my visa and staying, and now I've spent pretty much half my life here.
Yeah, when you think about it, like you get into adulthood, and you're like, oh, okay, so my entire adult life has been in Japan. So, and right now, you are located where?
I'm down south in Fukuoka Prefecture on the island of Kyushu.
Excellent. Yeah, actually, and you, I just, we'll probably talk about it a lot in the episode, but you really, really make the best of Fukuoka. Like, you seem to have a love for Fukuoka that I don't think I'll be able to encapsulate within one little podcast episode. And I had the opportunity to visit back, last summer, and I instantly understood. So how long have you been located in Fukuoka?
I think I've been living in Fukuoka for around 10 years. Like, I don't count anymore, but it's probably 10.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, the city is great. I came here, I kind of worked my way up. So when I was an exchange student, I was down further south in Miyazaki. And then I did working holiday in Kumamoto Prefecture, which is next to Miyazaki and below Fukuoka. And then... you know, Fukuoka is just the big, it's the big city on the island. And I guess, like, through my time here, I really picked up that that was where everyone went for fun and for entertainment and for shopping and all that stuff. And so I guess when I was younger, I had, like, the Fukuoka akogare, which was, like, everyone was like, Fukuoka iina, like, kaimono ni ikitai na. And, like, you kind of pick up on that. Like, people are like, oh, Fukuoka, let's go on the weekend. Let's do this. And so as a young person, I was like, oh, like, maybe I'll go to school there. So I did language school for 2 years in Fukuoka, and I really fell in love with it. And it was just the perfect size for me. Everything I need is here. The weather is great. The cost of living is so much cheaper than up in Tokyo. Yeah, and I've just really been able to have a really comfortable life down here. So,
and it's bigger and more spacious than I think a lot of people imagine it to be as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's more of a city than people think it'll be. When like when they come, they're like, oh, you have an Apple store, you have H&M, you have Zara, you have like all those big foreign brands like planting their shops here. And like it feels like a big city. It's just that people don't really know about it. And it's really nice because it's not as crowded and just a lot easier to get by here.
If I had to choose actually between Tokyo nightlife and Fukuoka nightlife, Fukuoka all the way, 100%. Fukuoka is actually a lot more alive later into the night than Tokyo is. It's unbelievable. You wouldn't expect it. You expect Tokyo to be a little more like New York, the city that never sleeps.
Yeah.
But no, Fukuoka is the city that never sleeps.
Oh my gosh. You go out for what you think is going to be a typical Japanese nomikai, like a little like party. And they're going to like 5 a.m. And then at the end of the night, they're like, oh, let's have some shime no ramen. And like, they want to eat ramen at the end of the night. And you're like, no, just let me go home. It's crazy.
My hotel was near the canal city.
In Nakase, right? Yeah.
And there's that line of ramen shops there.
Oh, yeah.
And I went out at maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were still full at 2, 3 in the morning.
Definitely. No. That's a fun area to be in if you're a night person.
You'd mentioned the Fukuoka no akogare, and it's funny because when I first came to Japan, also surprisingly 15 years ago, I spent a good chunk of my time in Shimonoseki, which is at the very bottom tip of Honshu.
Oh yeah, I know Shimonoseki,
known for like blowfish and all that. And it was exactly the same. There's nothing to do in Shimonoseki, so for fun, I would go into Fukuoka at the time.
Yeah,
so you do kind of build a love for it.
It is like it's the biggest city for a lot of us in the lower region of Kanto and then also like in Kyushu. And I even think like Okinawa as well. It's kind of like the biggest I guess in Okinawa they have like Taiwan. But it's a really good place. It's super convenient and everything you need is right in the city. So it's great.
So when I was there last time, though, I took some time and I actually went on to the outskirts of the city. And even just the residential areas just outside of the city, they seem to be, I'm assuming here, but much more accessible by car than they would by train. But again, very wide. And the airport as well. Oh, what I wouldn't give to have an airport like just
right
there.
In the middle of the city, right? Yeah. It's so convenient. Even when I take a taxi, like if I arrive late and I'm kind of tired, it's like a taxi from Fukuoka International Airport to my apartment in the middle of the city is like $20. And it's just like, well, for that price, I don't know. I don't mind paying it if I have a lot of luggage and it's not like breaking the bank. But if I take public transportation, it's actually about the same amount of time as a taxi, but a lot cheaper because, yeah, you're getting that direct route underground and all that. But yeah.
How, with the airport being in the middle of the city like that, one thing that I surprisingly didn't notice was a lot of airplane noise. Do you find that different areas of the city have more noise than others?
Well, living downtown, you do see a lot of airplanes flying overhead all day. And like you hear them, but they're not like overwhelmingly loud. And I know like when we fly into Fukuoka City, it always depends on the wind direction. But most of the time you come in over Shikanoshima, which is like this little peninsula, and then you turn in and you go around. And yeah, it doesn't actually cover like the city center that often. So I guess we get to avoid a lot of like noise pollution, but we do have a rule. So the downside to it being right in the center of the city is that the airport, I think they have to close by 10 PM just to like for that noise law. Because otherwise it would keep people up late. So, a lot of the last flights when you're coming back from Tokyo are around like 8. I think 9 is like 8:39 is like the last flight you can take from Tokyo, which because you have to arrive by 10, and if you come later there's like a penalty or something. So I remember like once I was flying from Vancouver to Fukuoka and I had a layover in Shanghai because I think that's one of those tips I would give people if they're booking tickets home. Like, don't book through China Eastern. They'll always, like, advertise these super cheap flights, but then you end up with a layover in Shanghai. And what happened was they kept pushing our flight, and it got delayed, delayed, delayed. And then eventually they were like, we will arrive after 10 p.m., and we don't want to pay the fine. They were like, well, now, like, if we leave now, we're going to arrive too late, so the flight's canceled till tomorrow. And then I had to stay the night in China. It was wild. They put us in rooms with other guests, so I had to share a room with like this complete stranger.
Really?
Yeah. I would recommend it. Now I pay full price for my flights home. Yeah.
Completely. And I ended up flying China Eastern to and from Italy at one point last year with some Japanese shamisen players. And when they were checking the bags, they looked in and they were like, "What is this?" And they started like banging it against stuff. Oh, I was like, I had to jump in. I was like, please don't. This is an instrument.
Usually now it's like, I love when I fly to Canada from Fukuoka. That's another thing. That's like, it's just, it is really easy to fly international because normally if you're in another prefecture, you'd have to fly to Tokyo, Haneda, and transfer and then go out. But I find Haneda, Tokyo transfers to be the most expensive. And what ends up being cheaper from Fukuoka is flying from Fukuoka to Taiwan and then taking EVA or China Airlines, which is not the same as China Eastern. Yeah, and like flying down to Taiwan and then like using their international airport.
Okay.
And it's about 2.5 hours, 3 hour flight down to Taiwan, or it's actually closer to fly to Seoul. Like it's like less than 2 hours to fly to Seoul and use Incheon's international airport than it is to fly to Narita. So
does that work coming into Japan as well? Like if somebody wanted to come in from overseas into Fukuoka?
Yeah, for sure. Transfer in Incheon and come to Fukuoka or transfer in Taipei. Taipei takes longer, but it's cheaper for some reason. Yeah, sometimes they do like these 12-hour layovers in Taiwan. And then if you're a visitor and you have a foreign passport, if you go to the airport, you get to do like this little bus tour of the city during your 12-hour layover. And it's quite long, but it's fun and it's a great way to get like a little extra sightseeing done during your trip.
Well, there we go. Travel pro tips by Michaela.
I've been doing this for 15 years. I have tips. Yeah.
But that reminds me that the whole flight over the city thing. Have you heard about them changing the Haneda airport flight routes in Tokyo?
And there's like some people have been complaining about it, hey?
Yeah, it's well, it's affecting 1 million people because it flies directly over Shinjuku and Shibuya, Ebisu, Meguro,
Shinagawa. Yeah, but those are like noisy places anyway.
You would think, but when you get into the, like, it should be a Shinjuku, absolutely. But when it gets into Ebis and Meguro and whatnot, these are actually, like, more quiet residential areas. And so I was in Ebis the other day and had the planes coming overhead about every 4 minutes or so. And it just roared. The buildings catch it. It really just becomes,
so it
like,
kinda echoes in the
same
concrete
way that, in the same way it kind of catches wind and like funnels the wind, it is loud. So
that would happen.
I feel bad for people who have bought apartments in that area and love to have their windows open because no more of that.
Actually, I guess like Haneda would get pretty big airplanes as well. So like they're getting a lot of those like jumbo jets where. Maybe not so fun if you don't like airplanes.
And the closer you get to the airport area, obviously, the lower they get. And it's just, you can see them. You can read the text on the bottom of these jumbo jets. And it's kind of surprising to see. But not to put you on the spot, but you said, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years. I've got all the pro tips. If any others come to mind throughout this podcast, I give you full permission to stop the flow of everything and be like, oh, got another pro tip. We all love the pro tips. So in terms of Fukuoka in general, one thing that I've noticed that I actually, the thing I'd say I enjoy the most about our interaction on Instagram is the level of care that you put into both the prep and discovery of food. You seem to have an incredible love for food.
Would
you be able to
speak
to that a bit?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, I mean, I love eating. I don't know. I think most people love eating, but I did realize when I went back to Canada and I like had dinner with my parents that there maybe wasn't as much of a love or appreciation for food with them. And I was like, well, I guess I don't get this from my parents. I think, again, I'm really lucky to live in Fukuoka, which has, you know, the reputation for having some of the best food in Japan, especially, like you mentioned, the ramen street stalls. Like, you can sit at a yatai on the river and have ramen, yakitori, or, like, you know, like, those, like, izakaya-grade bar foods are very accessible. But I also find, because Fukuoka has a very high population of younger residents, I think it's one of the youngest cities in Japan, like in terms of the average age being around 20 to 30.
Oh, wow.
Whereas like a lot of the older, you know, like a lot of other cities have aging populations. There's quite a lot of youth culture in Fukuoka. So you have a lot of young people starting businesses here. So you'll see trending cafes, you know, they'll see something, they'll get inspired by something and they'll open it up downtown. And maybe this shop itself will only last like a year or so, but everyone's trying new things and they're bringing new inspiration and new ideas to the cafes and restaurants in Fukuoka. And I think if you're someone who loves to go outside and eat, which I do, because otherwise if I'm editing, I'm staying home all the time.
Yeah.
So I think like for me, it's like my vice and it's like my reward is to go out and find these really good restaurants and sit down and try something new. And if it's great, then I love sharing it and letting people know about it, because I think the other thing too is living here for a long time, I also realized that there's not a lot of English information out there for foreigners who want to come down to Kyushu. And when they do come down here, they might feel a little bit apprehensive if there's not a lot of information laid out for them. So for me to be like that portal where I'm like, hey, this place just opened up, you know, and this is what they serve. This is great. I recommend you order this. You know, I feel like that helps relieve a little bit of anxiety that some people might have when they want to stray from, you know, Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, and make their way down.
Definitely.
Yeah, so it's a hobby and a passion project, but it's also like a vice, and it's a way that I can get out and like, de-stress after being home and staring at my screens for a long time. Yeah.
But it works though, like your entire concept. Like for me, as soon as I got down there, I gravitated towards certain spots because I knew them from your Instagram.
Or you
have it in this at the next thing, like the Fukuoka coffee place.
Ah, fuck coffee.
Yes, yes. I actually spent I'd say like 2 hours there with like the staff, and they saw all my cameras and they're like, are you a photographer? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, can you help us with our Instagram? And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, how can we? And so we actually like laid out a bar stool and did all these like fancy photos we laid out cookies and everything like that.
I bet they'd really appreciate that. That's awesome.
We just had a really good time. And they were very welcoming, just so easy to talk to and friendly. Would you say all of Kogo is that friendly?
I think there's a lot of young people. And again, like one of the things that I find really nice about living in Fukuoka is because of the youth culture, there's a lot of people who are not apprehensive about talking to other young people, and especially foreigners. Like, they're not like, oh, I don't speak English, I don't know what to do. They're like, oh, hey, like, you know, like as fellow young people, maybe you can help me out, and like maybe you can give me advice on this. There's more of a community sense, especially among younger creatives. It's really nice.
It's not. Yeah, it is. So there's that right near the river, just down from the canal city there.
Yeah.
There's, I believe, the cafe, and it's got that like rooftop terrace thing where you can like, it's shaped like a boat.
Is it right across the street?
Yeah. It's just down the road from the Ichiran.
Okay. Oh.
And it like on the bridge to the river, there's that thing where you can go up onto the like, it's like a boardwalk on top of a roof.
So this must be recently, right?
Yeah.
That you went. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Like the new area, they've got like a new coffee shop. They've got like a tofu. It's like a tofu restaurant opened up a coffee shop, and it's called Toffee, like T-O-F-F-E-E. And the concept is that it's soy-based coffee. So it's like tofu and coffee put together, and the shop is Toffee. Coffee. So soy milk. Everything's so like, it's like coffee with soy milk.
Okay.
Like soy milk lattes. And then they also do like, they do regular coffee as well. Obviously, like you can
I was
have
imagining
it straight.
These like weird coffee
with chunks of
soybean hybrid. Like,
No. They make soy milk. Like the original shop makes tofu. And then the cafe is a soy milk based cafe. So like all the lattes are made with soy milk instead of regular milk. Yeah.
It'd be really nice to see a lot more of these shops here in Tokyo.
Yeah, no,
actually.
I know, right? Like, that's what I love about Fukuoka. Is like, this is actually a really cool idea, and this would probably work like in other places in Japan, but for some reason it's here instead of there. And yeah, no, I love stuff like that. I love discovering stuff like that.
Do you have a particular favorite restaurant that stands out among the rest?
I have a few. I have a few that are on my like no share list. So I share lots of places that I think foreigners will love that are like easy and accessible for tourists. And then like I have a few that are like my favorites that I don't want to share because I don't know. I just like they're special places for me. And if I go there, you know, I don't know. It's you got to keep a few for yourself, I think.
Yeah, you do. You do.
But like for things that I like to share, I think, I don't know if you saw Sharla's recent video, I took her to Sunflower Cafe in Itoshima. So that's one that I always recommend to people if they have a car, because it's like this little white seaside beach cottage, and the lighting is incredible. You get all this natural lighting inside. It's like pure white. You get these little sofas by these big windows that overlook the ocean, and it's just like really relaxing. I love the vibe. While you put in your food order, and it takes a little while because they're quite popular and usually they're really busy. So you can put in your food order, leave your stuff, and just go for a walk along the beach and kind of, enjoy the sunny day. There's a little shrine nearby that you can walk over to, and then come back, sit down, and then usually your appetizer or your salad or whatever comes out first is ready. Yeah, it's just like the whole experience is nice. It's not just about the food, but it's about like getting to de-stress somewhere that's like both picturesque and delicious.
Picturesque and delicious.
Yeah.
And really, it just takes, it can be one decent, I think a lot of people think that when they come to Japan, it's going to be the shrines and the temples and this, that, the next thing that will really give them the feel of Japan. But I think when you find a restaurant like that, that gives you a full sensory experience of it, you have the experience, you have the sights, the smells, the tastes, the much more, more often than not, it's a lot of people's restaurant experience that they're like, this was the moment I felt like I was really in Japan.
Yeah. I think, like, if people are looking for that, you know, the postcard traditional Japan experience, they'll go to Kyoto. And, like, if they're looking for, like, pop culture, they'll go to Akihabara, they'll go to Tokyo, they'll go to maid cafes and the robot cafe or robot restaurant. But I think for a lot of people who come to Fukuoka, they really just want to see a lifestyle city. Like, they want to see how people live, you know? They're like, let's take away the gimmicks and, you know, some of the other things that you can find in other cities across Japan, and let's see what people are doing for fun. Let's see how young people are spending their free time. And I think that you'll find a lot of that in Fukuoka. And, like, I think for living, Fukuoka is a great city. It's a great city if you just want to chill and you just want to spend some time, yeah, you know, enjoying good food, taking walks by the ocean, and going to, like, local events, going to, like, art shows, going to live music venues, and just living like the rest of us, you know?
Biggest Fukuoka fan in the world right there. It's really easy to understand why. Well, at the beginning of this episode, we talked a little bit about how you've got the pets. And I do want to come back to that topic right after the break. Well, hi guys, it's me again, and this is the section of the podcast where I would usually introduce our sponsor for the episode, had I had the foresight to seek out sponsorship for any of these before starting, which I, in retrospect, should have probably... Well, here we are. So we've got this little mid-roll break for just you and me to hang out, but I would like to potentially invite you out to hang out with a wonderful community of people, the community of people that have made this entirely possible from the very beginning, and that is the community over on Patreon. Just a safe and happy place to hang out, a place where actually all of these episodes are already uploaded and available and include video versions as well. So if that's the kind of thing that you're into and you're just looking for a little more positivity in your day and in your life and want to come hang out with us, we would love, and I mean love, to have you over there. I guess that's it for this little mid-roll segment. Thank you for joining us through it, and let's kick off with the second part of the episode. So yeah, we'll do that now. All right, welcome back. So we left off with the conversation about Fukuoka. I love the energy and passion about it. And there's actually something that I've always wanted to talk to you about, and we've just never had the opportunity to get into, and that is life with pets in Japan. Because you have right now one cat and one dog, right?
I do, yes. Okay. My favorite, my golden boy. They say not to pick favorites, but I have a favorite, and he is my dog. He is an 8-year-old Shiba Inu. His name is Kit. He's stubborn, he's grumpy, he's mouthy, yappy. He's just like a ball of personality. He is my little darling boy. I don't know. I'm such a oyabaka. So like when it comes to my dog, especially, I love him. He could do no wrong, but he's very wagamama. So what? I wouldn't say selfish, but what's the word? He's very bossy. He's very bossy and stubborn, but like I'm obsessed with him. He's the funniest little creature. Japanese dogs. So like the Shiba Inu, and then also there's the Akita Inu, and there's Kai. There's a bunch of breeds that are specifically Japanese, but they all share this quality of being extremely stubborn and really smart. Like they don't, they will take orders if the orders make sense to him, like to them. If I ask the dog to sit, he will think about why I'm asking him to sit, you know, like they think for themselves, and it's really interesting. If I ask him to come, it's like if I were to call him right now, he wouldn't come because he's in bed and he's comfortable. Like he's he thinks for himself. He's his own being, you know? He's not an obedient breed by any means, but yeah, he's a sweetheart and he's hilarious. And I feel like even after 8 years of owning this dog, I'm constantly finding new ways to like outsmart him and get him to do the things I want to do without specifically like forcing him.
They are very clever dogs, right? I think for those who may be having trouble like imagining the Japanese breeds of dogs, to give an absolutely terrible yet oddly accurate example, if you think of the movie Hachi with Richard Gere, that talks about Hachiko, the statue there in Shibuya. They're very loyal. They're very clever. They're very stubborn. Yeah.
So they love their family. I think that that's something that's really endearing too. Like, they are very family-oriented dogs, loyal to their masters. They are suspicious of any strangers, which is hilarious because we live in an apartment complex with multiple floors, and each floor looks exactly the same. And it's a pet-friendly apartment complex, so there's other dogs in the apartment complex as well. Mm. And Kit has trouble understanding how these people are allowed on his property. Like, he thinks the entire building is his property. And we've had neighbors that have been living here for 2-3 years, just as long as we have. And every time he sees them in the window walking through the hallway, he's on alert and he's barking and howling. And he can't understand how these people, like, he doesn't know, are allowed into the building. And it's really funny. But, no, he's a sweetheart. Like, he does love us. I know it sounds certain, but I know he does. Every night, you know, he has to sleep on the bed. When you go outside without him, he cries. He loves going for drives. He loves going to the park. He loves bringing his toys over and playing with his toys with you. And but if he's doing something that he wants to do, he's not going to stop what he's doing just because I ask him to. So, you know, he's kind of his own living being. And it's really interesting living with this dog and seeing him, watching him kind of process things. If I ask him to do something, there's always a minute or like a split second where you can see him trying to decide if he's going to listen or if he's not, you know. Like, put that shoe down, stop chewing my shoes. He'll be like, but I'm having fun. And then maybe he will, you know. He's like, but maybe I should. He always looks like he's thinking when you're talking to him, which is interesting. Anyway, I guess it's like, if you're not a dog person, that doesn't really make sense. But it is really fascinating living with this dog, this particular breed. I've had other dogs, you know, like I had a poodle for a bit, and she was a people pleaser. She would do whatever she could to get pets and praise, and she was always like jittery and shaking her tail. And Kit's not like that at all. You know, he's not looking for me to approve of him. Like,
very
he's just
judgmental.
He's living
about
his best
poodle.
Life. Yeah. No, I think that there are different types of dogs, and Kit is very much his own. Yeah, he's doing his own thing. And
how long have you and Kit been together?
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time. That's literally more than half of your life in Japan.
I know. It's crazy. I was really lucky. I was working with someone who bought him. And I mean, it was lucky for me, unlucky for them. They ended up getting very sick and going to the hospital for, I think, about 3 months. They're fine now, but it was right after they got this dog, and we were using this dog in this web series that we were shooting, and we still had to use the dog in the web series, but we had no one to take care of it. So the manager of the web series called me one day and was like, hey, would you want this dog? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I remember like going straight to my computer to Google what kind of dogs Shiba Inu were and like how to raise them. And everything online was like, you are raising a very stubborn dog. Like, this is recommended for experienced dog trainers. If it's your first dog, it's going to be tricky. I've had dogs before, but this is my first time raising a dog from a puppy. And it was a wild ride.
I remember we were standing in front of an absolutely gorgeous waterfall, and it was like, I think there was sunset behind the waterfall or something like that, and I turned around and you're completely gone. I couldn't find you, and there you are playing with somebody else's dog.
Someone else's Shiba. Yeah. So. So the interesting thing about owning a Shiba Inu in Japan, especially if it's like the Shiba, the standard colored orange and white Shiba Inu, is that I don't know what it is. Like, I would say 90% of Japanese people have either owned a Shiba Inu, or their grandparents have owned a Shiba Inu, or someone they know has had a Shiba Inu. And when you're walking your Shiba Inu down the street, people stop and they like call it different names. They're like, oh, it's Kojiro. Remember Kojiro? It looks just like Kojiro. Like, they all look the same. And everyone sees their dog, or like their memory of a dog, and they like project it onto your dog while you're walking. And you're like, oh, like it's Coco-chan. And I'm like, no, it's Kit. But they'll like, walking a Shiba in Japan is really surreal because everybody has like positive memories associated with a Shiba, and they'll usually stop and talk or ask questions, or if they're children, they want to come pet him. And luckily he's really good with kids. I can get him to sit and they'll just go and like pat him on the back and play with his tail, and he's good about it. I don't think he enjoys it, but he's good about it.
So it's like its own little subculture has developed around this specific dog.
Yeah, well, I think Shiba were, they were hunting dogs, and they were used, the Shiba were used as hunting dogs. They're like little bush dogs, and they've got like that little curly tail that like bobs in between the grass when they're like hunting prey. And then the Akita Inu, which are much bigger, were actually bred to be the emperor's dogs. So Akita Inu and Shiba Inu look very similar, but they have like this history of serving Japan for a really long time, and people just have like this really positive image of them.
Okay.
So yeah, and there's always like that little gap when they see a non-Japanese person with a Shiba Inu going for a walk. I get comments, they're like, you must really love Japan. And I'm like, I mean, I love, I love my life, but yeah, it's, they think that it's like born out of an obsession for historical Japanese things, but really someone just gave them to me when they couldn't take care of them anymore. Yeah, it's interesting.
Now, you had mentioned that you live in a pet-friendly apartment. Yeah. For those who may not be familiar with the concept, would you be able to say a little bit about what a pet-friendly apartment is or entails?
A pet-friendly apartment, it's basically, so I guess that's the thing. A lot of foreigners, non-Japanese people who move to Japan and stay here for a long time start to think about getting their own pets. And most pet, most apartments that that you can rent typically don't allow pets. They're very strict. They have no pet policies. And if you want an apartment with a pet, usually they cost more. Like, you're paying more for the same amount of space than you typically would if you were just living there by yourself. And you have to pay a pretty hefty deposit. So I think I had to pay like 3 months of deposit, like the rent times three just for the deposit. And then when I move out, they'll use that for cleaning, for replacing, you know, anything that they've scratched. It can be a little bit expensive if you want to live in Japan with a pet, because typical apartments will not allow them. And then you have to get permission. Usually when you apply to live in a pet-friendly apartment, they'll ask you questions. Sometimes they have weight restrictions. So they'll say, like, even if an apartment is pet-friendly, it'll say on the website, like, kogata ken nomi. Like, only small dogs, so, like, poodles or chihuahuas, dachshunds, you know, like, little things. A lot of places do not allow ogataken, which are, like, the big dogs, like, the, what, golden retrievers, or, actually, my neighbor had a saluki. Do you know what a saluki is?
No, what is that?
Oh, my God, it's kind of like, do you know what an Afghan hound is?
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, the show What a Mess?
Yes, absolutely.
So, like, One of Us was, like, the Afghan with, like, the ears. A Saluki is like that, but, like, skinny.
Okay.
Like, really skinny. Like, tall, beautiful, skinny. And my neighbor would just be outside, like, brushing her hair all the time. So, luckily, like, this apartment didn't have any restrictions. And I know for a fact that many people living here have more than one pet. Some... someone on the first floor actually rescues cats off the street. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I see her out there feeding the strays, and then like she'll bring them in the winter. So our apartment, thankfully, is very, very pet friendly, very relaxed, but the rent is more expensive than a typical apartment in this area would cost. And then the move-in costs were quite expensive as well. So having a pet in Japan can be a pretty big commitment financially. It's you got to be sure that you're willing to pay the money and also just commit to taking care of this other life for the duration of your time in Japan. And then even beyond when you go back to your own country, if you go back to your own country. So I didn't mention my other pet. My other pet is the cat.
Okay. The cat. Does the cat have a name?
So I told you, Kit is like my golden boy. He can do no wrong. He's beautiful. I love him. He's flawed, but we accept him. And then I have Lon, who is right here. I'm just going to grab him.
Yeah, in fact, the first, I think the first half segment of this episode.
Yeah, he was on my face. He was poking me. He was begging for attention. He's what?
Seems moody. Is he moody?
Yeah, now he's moody because I woke him up. He wanted all that attention earlier, and now that he's getting it, he loves attention. He loves cuddles. The thing about Lon, though, is that he scratches the sliding doors behind me that are made of paper.
Yep.
So Lon's hobbies include scratching those sliding doors. I've had to replace them. So I had to take all the paper out and repaper the doors because they had holes all over them, didn't they? Yeah. You just love scratching those doors. He's a Russian blue. He's a beautiful cat. He's gorgeous to look at, but he is a troublemaker. And he seems to really enjoy it. His hobbies also include sneaking up on the dog while the dog is sleeping and slapping him.
Sounds like a very cat thing to do.
He's very much a cat. I think now that I've been taking care of both pets for a while, I can't imagine living without either of them. They're sweethearts. And they're completely different personalities. The cat, I keep saying the cat.
The cat.
But I think that's kind of just a habit. We just go, the cat.
Hereto known as the cat.
The cat is very loving. He loves snuggles. He loves attention. He loves being near you. So even while I've been talking, like, the cat is the one that's curled up next to me while I'm talking, and the dog is, you know, still in bed.
Speaking of pet apartments, just a side tip for anybody listening right now. More often than not, if you play gentle instruments, I'm not talking like a trumpet or a trombone, I'm talking like a guitar or something like that, and you can't find a perfectly soundproof apartment, a lot of pet-friendly apartments will allow instruments during the daytime. More often than not, they're sound-treated better as well, because cats and dogs do make noises.
Yeah. So that's actually something that I've noticed, is that I know for a fact that other residents in my apartment have pets, because I see them in the elevator, I see them outside, like we pass each other on a day-to-day basis and say hello and praise each other's animals, which is a thing that people do. But for all the animals that I've seen and that I can count that live in this apartment complex, I never hear them. Even our neighbors just moved in last week, and they told us they have a dog, and I've not seen the dog. I've heard it, but very, very quietly. Like usually the first week after you move, a pet is still getting used to a new environment. They're very skittish. And I can very, very, like, very quietly hear like a but it doesn't echo. It's like if I stop everything I'm doing and listen for it, I can hear the dog barking. But otherwise, the floors, I don't hear people running upstairs. I hope they don't hear us running around on our floor, and I definitely never hear my neighbors. So soundproof, very easygoing, because everyone here has pets and everyone here has things that make noise. Some people have children as well, and like we are generally pretty easygoing here.
And when, so I moved last April, and in the area I'm in, I had trouble finding a soundproof apartment. And so I defaulted to exactly that, finding a pets friendly apartment, because they tend to have more concrete walls, tend to be more soundproof, a lot more forgiving of sound. And now I have my space here that I can play shamisen. I still keep it to, you know, daytime, usually between like 10 a.m. and maybe 7 p.m. at the very latest. Mm-hmm. But I have been playing here in this room for the past year and not had trouble once. And the shamisen is a very loud instrument too,
because
it's like 130 decibels. So
you did you have complaints before in the place you were living before?
No, the place that I lived before was completely soundproof. So okay. I had no issues there.
Yeah.
But completely soundproof apartments, like that place was built in 2011, I think. Mm. And I moved in, and I think it was finished in 2012. And I moved in at the end of 2012.
Did you like a cat?
I really miss the pet life. I don't miss the hair, I'll tell you that. The hair that gets absolutely everywhere. But I've except for my main office, I've set up the rest of the place to be a lot more minimalistic. So, you know, I had fish until around May.
Fish are boring though.
They are. But you still, after like, we were together for like 8-9 months and I moved, and they survived a good month, almost 2 months here with no problems. And then I woke up one morning and they were all floating,
In
their usual way. And I was actually, I didn't expect to be so shaken by the loss of these, because I had just, things become oddly more real after you announce them on your channel as well. Mm. Like I had finally shared them with the world, because I had been with them for so long.
You had to follow up and say that they were now dead.
I don't even think I ever announced it. I was just too heartbroken to even share the news. Nah. So fish might be boring, but they still got into my heart. So
They swam their way into your life and your heart.
They did. It was very poetic. Yeah. So excellent. Well, before we use up the entire day, I think what we'll do is we'll call this part one and we will wrap up here for now.
Okay.
Any closing thoughts? Anything you wanted to share with everybody?
No. I don't know. I think, like, just summarizing everything that we've been talking about too, I want to say that for me, having the two pets and living with the two pets is probably only possible because I'm living in Fukuoka. Because I think if I were living in Tokyo with two pets, it would be insanely expensive, and I think the place would be much smaller. I think living in Fukuoka, where the cost of living is so much lower and even apartment prices are so much lower, I'm able to live super comfortably and like even take on the responsibility of these two pets that I care for. I think all of that actually is mostly possible for me because I chose to live in Kyushu rather than up in the Kanto area. So it's really tied together, I think, more than I realized until just now when I was thinking about the summary of the conversation that we just had. I think if you want to have like a relaxed, comfortable life, it's definitely worth venturing out from the big city and finding a place where you can settle a little bit away from it all. And it's weird saying that Fukuoka City would be like away from it all, because it still feels like a big city, but it's not the big city. It's not the one that everyone flocks to. So yeah, there are definitely places outside of Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto worth, you know, checking out. And especially if you're looking to live here long term, you can build a very comfortable, nice life for yourself outside of the big cities, and fall in love with different areas of Japan as well. So that's pretty interesting, I think. Yeah.
It also feels like it's a really great area just to travel from. Like Kyushu in general was really beautiful. I feel like there's going to be so many more topics that we're going to have to cover next time. Like we didn't even get into, I really wanted to touch base on the whole driving aspect of things, because you did the entire video on getting a license and driving, and then you went from having a car to doing the car share program. But I feel like all of that is an episode all in its own.
For sure.
So thank you so much for sharing all of this today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime. And I guess we will, I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. 2005, when I visited Japan for the first time, I spent a large bulk of that time in Shimonoseki on the very bottom tip of Honshu and was continually going to Fukuoka. I loved it then. I love it now. It's really easy to understand why Michaela loves it so much. There is really something about it that pulls you in. I cannot say that enough. I think you definitely got that from this episode. But if you're ever coming to Japan, while many people do stick to the main island of Honshu and hit up the areas like Tokyo and Osaka and Kyoto and all of those, Fukuoka is a spectacular, just spectacular spot. And I hope that today this episode with Michaela has given you some insight into that, as well as some of the finer details of what it's like to live with pets in Japan and all of that. In our next episode of this, we are going to be jumping off of the island of Kyushu and heading across the water just a little bit to a place that I feel very, very strongly feel is one of the undiscovered gems of Japan, one of the best places to travel in the entire country and to discover a Japan that you may only know from movies. An untouched, beautiful. I'm just going to leave it at that. That's it. That's all I'm going to say about it. For any more, you'll just have to wait until the next episode. And with all of that being said, my coffee cup is just about empty, so I think it's time for me to grab another refill so I can kick back with that episode. Don't forget to take a break from the world every now and then and fill your ears, maybe your time, your day with something a little more positive. Thank you guys so much for joining this episode of the At Home Show, and I will talk to you again real soon.